you to the third in our series of Turner Prize Artist Talks with Angela Dela Cruz. This event will present an insight into the artist's work with a presentation by curator Carolina Grau, followed by a question and answer session with Angela. So when we do get to that section, I have a microphone in my hand and we'll be handing those around. So if you could wait, because as I'm sure you've noticed, the event is being recorded. Now, a little introduction. Born in Spain, Angela Dela Cruz moved to the UK in 1987 and studied at Goldsmiths College and then at the Slade School of Art. Her work's been exhibited in the UK and internationally, and she has been nominated for this year's Turner Prize for her solo exhibition After at the Camden Arts Centre, which took place earlier this year. Carolina Grau is an international curator based in London and Barcelona. She has curated and co-curated numerous exhibitions and biennials worldwide and worked with a huge range of contemporary artists, including Rachel Whiteread, Steve McQueen, Rosalind Nashashibi, and Juan Munoz. Carolina has known Angela for a very long time. They've worked together and been in touch with each other since 1995. And she's written a number of articles and essays on Angela's practice and is also working with Angela, I'm told, on a new exhibition which will open in Spain in 2013. So now I'd like to hand over to Carolina and Angela. Thank you.
Thank you. First of all, Angela and I would like to thank you for being here with us. Angela asked me to do the presentation of her work because since she had her stroke, she finds it difficult to speak. So we'll join in every now and then and take some of the questions you have at the end. Perhaps the most important thing here is that how Angela and I, we have come together. Angela and I, we met at Qubit Space in 95. We met in a private view. At that time, Qubit was in its cross, and in the future of the space was very important for Angela as it became one of her studios. We met because Syl Floyer and Martin Creed said to me, "Oh, you must meet Angela Dela Cruz. It's a Spanish artist who's studying with us at the Slade." So the private view arrived, and Syl Floyer introduced me to Angela and said, "Angela, Carolina, Carolina, Angela." And Angela looked at me upside down and said, "Are you Spanish?" And I say, "Yes." She just turned around and walked away. From then on, we became friends. Our relationship has been, I work for Angela, I work with Angela. And part of this presentation, we wanted to reflect a lot of the process of her work and the studio. Yesterday, in her studio, we opened a box who has been closed for 5 years, and we have brought some things for you to see for the first time ever. One of them is this video that we are going to play now. Sound. The studio is a very important part of the life of Angela. She has always collaborated with people like me. There are quite a lot of collaborators here tonight who have painted, moved things, film, take photographs, like Hugo Glendine, Johnny Sazar. But Angela came in the late 80s to London when she had already done some philosophy at the University of Santiago de Compostela in Galicia. She did her BA at Goldsmith in 1991-94, and then she did her MA at the Slade. At that time, Angela has always said that painting was the ugly sister, as the other arts were far more glamorous at the beginning of the 90s. The starting point was deconstructing the painting, eliminating, separating the colors, as you have here the image of the MA show of Angela at the Slade. What was left was a stretcher. She felt she couldn't paint as she was painting the same painting again and again and again. One day, Angela broke the painting, not in anger, but in sadness. At that moment, she realized that she had the possibility of another kind of relationship with her work. She looked at the painting as an object. She wanted the painting to be like an installation. She realized that she could only move forward by looking at the work in terms of three dimensions, not two. She changed the conditions of the act of looking and thinking about her work. Title becomes very important because the moment you move a painting and you place it in a corner, you need to call it a shame. It is folded in itself, very high, placed. It took the space of a corner. At that moment, Angela was asked to be in a show, and all the painters were fighting to have the big space. All the paintings were at eye level, and Angela found a new way of showing painting. Homeless was the next painting. It was for the first time she broke the painting half, so she couldn't hang on the wall. So it was a homeless painting that couldn't have a wall, but also represent a homeless person. The ones you can see in King's Cross on a corner lurking in the past, in the early 90s. One of the things we were talking yesterday, it was a lot of ideas I didn't know behind a lot of the works. Sea Folded is a series of three works: Sea Folded, Sky Folded, and Landscape Folded. Angela at that time was going a lot to New York, and she wanted to carry her works in a suitcase. And by folding in the painting, she was able to carry the work to the United States inside the suitcase. Yeah. Crash is the first painting that Angela put literally on the floor. She liked the idea of duets, as you can see with us. And she wanted a double painting, and also what she was aiming here is how a painting could do an action and the other one receive it. So Crash, in a way, is perfect. You have the one who is doing the crash and the one who gets the crash. Cadillac, it was the first painting that didn't have a stretcher. It was on the floor and not a stretcher. At that time, Angela had gone to New York and she was amazed to see Cadillacs. She loves them. I mean, you said that yesterday. And when she saw the Cadillacs, she thought it was something so amazing. And she wanted to do an homage to the kind of a car culture United States have. And that's how it came Cadillac. That you find one of most, one important painting.
Yeah.
Self. Anyone who has known Angela, she used to have a small studio in the old Spitalfields Market. It was like a tiny, tiny, tiny shoe box. And there were all these paintings, and always there would be a space on the wall where Angela would hang her painting and a chair in front. And she would spend hours and hours and hours, like any painter or any artist, sitting on the chair, thinking, looking. But who is looking at who? Is the painter looking at the painting, or is the painting looking at the painter? Titles, as you can see, are very important to define things. Humor, also. As Angela said, I'm sardonic, not ironic. Vomit, we have chosen this image because yesterday there was a lot of changes with the PowerPoint, but Vomit is like this series of painting that Angela called everyday painting. She used a lot of earthbound colors, eschatological. The surfaces are dirty. In a way, they are more approachable. And if you want, they are prone to accidents. And also, in a way, sometimes they are quite biographical, as Angela says.
Yeah.
Blown Up, Clark Kent and Superman. Angela said yesterday that one painting is Superman and the other one is Clark Kent. Yeah. Which one is Superman?
The big one.
The big one is Superman. Why? Because
it's very fast.
It's flying. So Clark Kent is the shiny one without the glasses, and then the big one is like Superman flying. He has the wings spread. Falling on your own bat. Falling on your own bat is a very important work for Angela. At that time, she was developing this language. And then it is very, you need to be very careful how you place the painting and how you place in the space. She wanted to do an action, but it needed to be an action that anyone could recognize, anyone could have happened. And as Angela says, I think it has not happened to me, everybody has sleep in a banana skin. Not me. But what happens with Falling on Your Butt is that it is also the first time that Angela is using four monochrome paintings together to show one action, one painting. Also, what is also very important is that you have the border defined in the painting because you don't want to lose the sense of painting. Because by using four, you could lose it in a way. Three of the squares are broken, and only one is compact. But no matter what, Angela has managed between the wall and the floor to make you feel there is a person half standing, half falling. It's that moment that you are slippering, trying to hold yourself to the wall. No?
Yeah.
No matter how Angela has always break any canvas, she will always start the same way. She would do a canvas, a square, a stretcher, always very taut.
Very traditional.
Very traditional.
Yeah.
The history of painting is always present. You don't want to lose that, because if not, when you break it, it disappears. Mm. So it needs to be present.
Yes.
Always painted on a brush horizontally, so you always have the sense of landscape.
Yes.
And always monochromes.
Yes.
Bully. I mean, bully, in a way, it refers to our Spanish roots. Bully is the Spanish picaresque, the lichecho. In Spain, we love the human misery. We have several writers at that time that they were writing about how it was kind of these characters who would have miseries, accidents, they will need to survive in a society, would not let them live. So everything is about how to go living and surviving in the world. One of them is El Buscón del Quevedo, Lazarillo de Tormes, there's a little child who is given to be taken care of by a blind person who abuses all the way through all his life. So Bully, you have the big painting stamping in the small one. Off guard. Oh, that has happened even to a president of the United States one. Was it at the time of Clinton, Angela? Misery, it wants to reflect the worst thing it can happen to a painting, to be stepped on a private view. It is the first time, well, the second time we self, that Angela starts to introduce no objects in her work to do her installations. Nothing. Nothing was a painting that has fulfilled all the function. Like a sheet of paper that you crumple and you throw away and it goes into the corner of the space. From everyday paintings, Angela started to do commodity paintings. Commodity paintings are a series of work, like nothing, that they will have the same concept, but you can do it in different sizes, large, medium, and small, and in prime colors, red, white, or blue. Nothing Under the Chair, it is a major work for Angela. As she said to me yesterday, I didn't know, even we have been knowing each other for 15 years, it is an homage to Duchamp. You have a nothing painting that is nothing, and a space under a chair that is a nothing space. So a nothing and a nothing creates, becomes something. Ready to Wear. Ready to Wear is also another series of commodity paintings. These ones are really based in fashion. Angela has never hidden the fact that fashion is very important for her work. Also, her body is very important for her work. And if you deal with the body, you need to deal with fashion in a way, and it covers your body. Some of the people that you like, designers, are Yamamoto,
Magiela. I can't think that.
No, you cannot think now. But the paintings, that they have a role. Which one?
The
Rafael Manguela. They are paintings that they need to sell themselves. They need to show off. They need to be sexist. The strip of the, a bit showing like, kind of, you know, showing a bit the shoulder, you know? I mean, I found it very sexist, like kind of a stripping a bit, no? You know, walking in there and saying, hey, look at me. Don't you think I'm sexy? They are, as the commodity paintings, in small, medium, large, red, white, and dark blue. But also in relation to fashion is that a lot of, Angela has worked with a fashion designer called Rafael López. And one of the things he said is that, you know, I mean, ready to wear is how you want, what fashion changed from being made especially for each person at the beginning of the century, it became that you could buy it. It was in a specific site, and you could just go to a shop and just buy something and wear it. That's ready to wear. No? Okay. Damask Red, I was told yesterday that it was a painting because one of the commercial galleries of Angela asked her to do a painting for an art fair. I said, Angela, please, fast, give me a painting for the art fair. And then she thought, you want a painting for the art fair? I'll give you one. So this painting is called Damage, and she asked them to put it in the corridor where the people pass by. So anyone who passed by would think that another collector had broken the painting. Flop. Lynn Brown. Angela wanted to play with the idea. I mean, she will keep playing a lot. You will see it as we pass the images, with the idea of standing the paintings. Paintings standing. I mean, already we saw at your MA show that you were playing with that. It's something that she wanted always to put this third dimension fully. It's a painting that is limping. I mean, it's like it has been cut the leg, and then very, very rudimentary, with tape, Angela has had at the bottom left another painting. That's the limp. Also, a limping person is someone that in Spain, in the picaresque, will survive by asking money with his limp, will perform for the audience. Rich Brown is based because Angela saw in Perth, Australia, a table that had wedges underneath, and these wedges thought it was very interesting, this idea of trying to make something taller. From then on, Angela has played with this idea a lot. This is the first time she put a painting on top of another painting. So the second painting becomes a wedge. No?
The first one.
So she really wanted to make a very tall painting. At that time, she was in Cubit, in Angel. Before, she was producing all her work in Cubit in King's Cross, who was a lot of prostitutes, lots of drugs, used a kind of distorted side of London that she kind of reflected in her own paintings with the colors. Also, Rich Brown, it is recycled painting. It is the first time that Angela started to recycle painting. For Angela, she will from now on recycle everything. Nothing will be thrown away. The studio will become like a huge storage of things, especially paintings. Misery, that we saw before. Loose Feet.
That was in the studio.
That was in the studio. Loose Feet Large. This is the first Loose Feet. Loose Feet is inside the series of Commodity, but it kind of shows the excess of the body. You know, when you lose weight and your skin starts hanging. For Angela, the canvas, the stretchers always become, the painting is kind of an extension of herself. Loose Feet, it was important because yesterday, talking, she said to me that the idea came, the first idea came, because she went to see a friend who had AIDS. And it's just at that stage when you have lost so much weight, there's only that what you have is the structure of the bones and the skin. That's why she decided to do Loose Feet. That here perhaps is like more obvious. It's like when the all the skin of the body is hanging from the torso. Shrunk is a painting. Angela wanted to do a painting that you could put anywhere. Didn't matter what space it was, which size of the space, you could just put it there. So, shrunk. It's from Loose Feet.
No, shrunk to fit.
Shrunk to fit. But you would do it in a big painting and then crumble it in a small canvas.
Yeah. The painting.
Is that the woman in crisscross?
Yeah.
Still life. Still life, table, and chair. It is a major point in the work of Angela. Volume, mass, and weight, for the first time, is open up. Paintings becomes a sculpture. You can stand up. The painting is standing up. You can put it anything inside a painting. In a way, some of the ideas we had yesterday, I mean, I'm going to read it because it was very funny. It was tea cozy, condom, fist fucking, tumor. Angela had been trying for a long time how to combine and be able to put a painting who will have the volume, mass, and weight. At that time, she reached it. Next to it, in still life chair, even we have later an image, is a square table. It is a table, a top of a, it's a table that Angela found in a skip outside King's Cross. And so it's a perfect square, it's a perfect monochrome. So she picked up the table, bent the legs, and just hung it on the wall. Fovea, it is very important because it is the first time that Angela uses acrylic. Materials are very important. Before, she would use oil and spectra gel. No? Spectra gel.
Yes.
Before, they used to be lumpy, disgusting, dirty, the paintings. Now they become shiny, wet, new. Angela yesterday mentioned to me that Fovea, is like, she liked it a lot because it's like a folded bed. And I was thinking when I was younger in Spain, in this kind of summer houses, you know, we come from very big families. We have lots of brothers and sisters, both of us. There will always be a folded bed in one of the corridors.
Yeah.
Always. Yeah. And it would be so funny to undo the bed because it will always collapse. It's something that will never work. No one wanted to sleep there. But it's like that. It's a folded bed. Stuck. This is the first time you do a site-specific installation.
The second time.
The second time.
Yeah.
What is the first time?
The one I did in the first one.
Oh, alive. Oh, yeah.
That one.
That one. Oh, yeah. We forgot about the very, very big one that was in London.
That one.
First, well, there was a larger than life that she did at the Royal Festival Hall. I don't know if any one of you saw it.
And my mom was working.
And Jemima was working on it, painting. It was a massive painting that was at the Royal Festival Hall that was measuring 10 by 14 meters. Is that right?
Yeah, it was horrible.
Horrible. You're not supposed to say that about your work, Angela. And she did this huge painting that she wanted to cram to the space. But I'll speak about larger than life after because we have an image. But stuck. This is the studio door of Cubit in Angel. And Angela called me and said, I've done something fantastic. None of my paintings can come out of my studio. Come and see. And yeah, you had all this painting trying to come out from the studio. So Stag was born at that moment. I think also at that time, Angela was really obsessed with the idea of excess, recycling, the history of painting. I mean, one of the a lot of times you have said is that you think always about all these paintings there in all these studios all over the world, of all these painters that are producing paintings that they are never shown, they are on the studio, all the tests that one does to do. This is Larger Than Life. Perhaps we should play the video that we have of Larger Than Life. This is a video, I mean, the music is a bit cheesy. I need to confess. It was done by a friend. But you could see the process.
Yeah! It's the flame, home. Cold chilling the
pit. And Angela loves it.
Public Enemy. In their music, kind of rebel rousing, they talk about, well, things like. You know, the white media's been very upset about some of the things you say in your song. The way I get them cause people are very upset by the things you're saying. It's on the air. Hello?
Yes, hello.
Yes.
I've seen these guys. I saw them warm up for the Beastie Boys last year.
How were they?
I thought it was one of the most appalling things I have ever seen. There were two gentlemen in cages on either side of the stage with fake booties. There were, Jesus, it was unbelievable. And when I see somebody who's wearing one of their shirts, I think that they're scum too.
Hello? Do you need it? Hello? Do you need it?
Yeah, why do you even pay homage to Spew by putting these monkeys on?
Hello? Hello?
He doesn't have the guts to tell him that. He doesn't know what he's talking about.
Hello? Do you need it?
We like a lot that. Larger Than Life. This is the second Larger Than Life that Angela did. The first one was at the Royal Festival Hall. I'm sorry we didn't put an image because perhaps it would have been interesting to see the difference. But Larger Than Life came about because Angela saw this image at the Granta. Sorry, we didn't put it in the PowerPoint. Chris Walker is an ex-combatant from the Korean War that he had a post-traumatic stress disorder and tried to kill himself by overeating until he began making his living as the world's fattest man. Like he became a freak and a bit like the picaresque. And Angela found it, she loved reading Angela and she was always a member, subscribed to Granta. But Angela found it fascinating, no? That you could see this fat man with this little towel covering himself and trying to touch the cat and everybody looking at him. Thank you, my man. It's a kind of a very disturbing image. But from that image, Angela, you have this idea of a gigantic, a big, very big painting, unable to move, you know, sitting in the space. In Larger Than Life, they didn't have walls because the first time she did it, it was for a little project that is in Germany where they give you a maquette of a fictional space and you will produce an impossible work in this space that is like in a small scale, never will be real. And it was the first time that Angela placed the big painting in a small space. And then when the Royal Festival Hall commissioned her, she thought of the idea of putting this big painting in the middle between the four columns. And Angela was not very convinced of their result.
No.
It was kind of the ugly, fat lady in the South Bank. Here at the Marco Vigo, it was another opportunity. It became very important, the color of this Larger Than Life is related to the outside of the space that you have seen in the video. Like the Larger Than Life in the Royal Festival Hall, it did kind of also camouflage itself because it kind of reproduced the parquet floor of the Royal Festival Hall. And in Vigo, it was very important to have Stag next to Larger Than Life. So you have a reference of two big paintings trying to fight the way out of the space. Also, the irony is that the space that it was given to Angela of this museum, it was a big museum, and they gave him like the back space at the back, and the kind of a, you know, you needed to go through the back to go and see it. So it was like kind of, Angela thought, okay, you give me that, I'm going to make a very big painting for you. It's like the ugly sister that they don't want anyone to show in the big space. Isn't it?
Yeah.
Or no?
Yeah.
Or perhaps you don't agree with me, Angela. You can disagree, eh? You are very welcome. Shelf. It is very important because, as I mentioned before, Angela is very interested in the history of painting. So this is a shelf that has collapsed with all the history of painting. Also, a shelf is used for storage. So it's like you combine history of painting and storage.
Yeah?
Yeah. Yeah. It's another, like the still lives, no? Yeah. You are using.
Falling on the wrong weight.
Falling on the own weight?
I think it's a...
Okay. Full recycle. This is the first time you recycle properly.
Completely.
I mean, from now on, we are in 2002, Angela really starts recycling paintings. She never throw anything away, and this has become something that she was going to work on. As she said yesterday, it is basically a piece of painting that becomes an object. I mean, it's like a folded umbrella. She just folded it and put it on the wall.
Yeah.
This is a studio shot. Everything gets recycled. I mean, this is like the Spanish cuisine. I mean, you need to think like that. This is like, you know, you have the head of the pig, the tail, the skin. You know, in Spain, especially in the area that Angela comes from, Galicia, they use everything. Nothing is thrown away. The ears, no? The tongue.
The tail.
Three-legged chair. Here's something perhaps important to mention that yesterday Angela was saying, is that everything can be art.
Yeah.
And humor is very important. And things that happens, sometimes Angela quickly grabs it and says, this is going to be very good. She had a friend who came to stay at her place and sat in the chair, not in the stall, and broke the leg. So Angela could not let the landlady to know that the friend broke the chair. So the only idea she had is like, okay, I'll take it to the studio. So she took it to the studio. So she arrives to the studio, and what you do with a chair that only has three legs? You cannot support it. So the only way of supporting it is to put it on top of a stool. So here comes three-legged chair.
Yeah.
But in the stool, you add wedges. You try to make it taller.
Because I was working at that time, making taller.
Because at the time you were making taller. You have done bridge. You were working with upright piano.
Yeah.
Which other work you were working that was taller?
I don't know.
Well, perhaps we see more. But when you see this piece in a exhibition space, it has it is now here the Turner Prize. You always have the reference of a person, a human being. Angela says it's kind of it would be the height of a person standing kind of half reclined in a bus. Also, yesterday she was telling me a story of the one-eyed man and the blind person. The blind person holds the one-eyed man so the one-eyed man can see better the way they're going. Who is the king?
The man
who can see. Okay. Upright piano. Shall we play the video? We have a video. It has never been shown before. Sorry about the quality, but as yesterday we discovered so many things, we thought it would be nice for you to see it, the process. Upright piano is a very important work because, as you saw, they join two pianos, one on top of each other. That is something that Angela, as she has said before, she was interested in height. And the height of the piano was determined by the height of her friend, Neil. Is her name of Neil?
Yeah.
What is his surname?
Quinton.
Neil Quinton, who is a composer. So he was chosen his height so he could play, and he did compose a piece specifically for the upright piano. That has he ever been played?
No.
Not yet. Containers and music is always have been very present in Angela's work and are going to be. One of the reasons he came to London, it was because of the music world. And one of the things about commodity paintings, Angela has always these paintings that she can produce, like they are like a series of paintings that they're always the same colors, like three colors, like we will see some of them now. Angela has always compared them to minimalist music, that you think you always are hearing the same sound, but afterwards you realize that you're hearing something else. Pianos became something that she will explore a lot, like the video we show at the beginning. At that time, she was working with a lot of piano containers, and she would destroy them. So far, the only one who has ended up being at work is upright piano. As you saw in the first video, most of them didn't survive. Do you have still one?
No.
No, in the studio? No, I didn't see any yesterday.
But they do not survive. a mad follower, but...
Square table, this is the piece, I mean, you can see here perfectly. I mean, upright piano with three-legged chair, they are the first works on the square table that there is no paint.
Yeah.
Square table that I mentioned before, you can really see how the legs have been folded. So in a way, it is the first, I mean, this work is very important because it's the first, let's say, sculpture that becomes a painting, not the other way around, and normally Angela makes paintings becoming a sculpture. So in a way, it's like the perfect circle, closing the circle. Torso. Torso, it is very important because this is the first time that Angela takes the measurements of her own body. So it's her torso. It's a metal box. At this point, Angela starts working with aluminium and wood. But this box is aluminium. Yeah. I mean, some of the things he was saying yesterday to me is that to reach this point, to be able to paint this perfectly, this aluminium box, there was a lot of errors. What you see of an artist is only what succeeds, not all the mistakes that he needs to make in order to arrive to this point. I mean, some things that look so simple, like doing an aluminium box painted, it can be rather complicated. Here, the her torso holds an old painting of Angela that is folded. From now on, Angela will work with this idea of paintings holding other paintings. But for me, in this case, especially this one, is like, that's a lot of reference also to self, the painting with the chair that looks another painting on the wall. And it's like Angela holding a painting inside her as is her own measurements, isn't it?
Yeah.
In a way, it's in a kind of portrait. Kind of. I mean, it's your measurements.
I know.
Kind of.
Yeah.
You disagree?
Yeah.
But disagree more. This is the solo show that Angela had at the Lison Gallery. Well,
four.
Yes. Yes. And we have upright three legs. I'll approach you.
Piano.
Upright piano. And what is this one?
The upright piano.
Ah, upright piano. And then we have one clutterbug.
Yeah.
And the filing cabinet with something inside, no?
Yeah.
Yeah. You don't want to talk, okay.
I don't remember.
You don't remember. these containers, so she will have different containers. She will have containers, they are wardrobes, containers that will be metal boxes, and also containers that will be all paintings that containing paintings. So the new painting is containing an old painting. You can see it.
A lot of paintings.
Ah, sorry, a lot of paintings. I mean, yeah, I mean, quite a lot of the works of Angela, when you look at the catalogs and you say, oh, this is fantastic, where is it? And she say, no, it has been recycled. And you're thinking, oh, great. You can see on the left some of the painting, of the old paintings. She's using shiny colors, orange, pink. The series goes on. And then we have verticals. Verticals are leftovers from clutter bags. So she puts all these minimal, these vertical paintings together.
Yeah.
Like a Donald Judd.
Yeah.
I mean, were you based on that?
No, I thought of that.
You thought of that? I mean, I love these paintings, personally. I think also, even they are always the paintings of Angela, no matter what you, even they are hanging or they are on the floor, you always know it's a painting. And also, like the idea of using, you know, that corner of the bastidor that no one wants to have, the edge, and make it like the main part of the painting. Mini Moons is a
recycled painting.
It's a recycled painting. Another part of the painting.
Yeah.
And you like you have just stripped, cut the painting in the stripes, and they roll it, and they create these minimum paintings. No?
Yeah.
Minimums comes in different colors. It's a bit like what I said before of the music, the minimalist music, no? Always the same sound, but different.
Yeah.
Yes, no? Here, Angela keeps going with the containers, and from the pianos, that the pianos contain sound, containers that contain paintings, we go to containers that are wardrobes.
Another manner.
But cut up with wardrobes. You start working with wardrobes because you pass by?
No, because I thought they look like deposits.
Because they look like a deposit, yeah.
The body.
The body, because they look like the body. And you kept inside.
Yes.
But suddenly you bought a lot of, I mean, at that time, this is before she had her first strokes. And Angela was working with this idea of her body inside boxes, no? Containers.
Yeah.
She would break the clutter, the wardrobes, piling them up, putting all of them inside each other, trying to play with this idea of containers inside of a container. Clutter with blanket.
After the body movement.
Yes. Clutter with blanket and half clutter. There are works, I mean, at that time, there was the war with Iraq and Afghanistan, and there was the bombing in Madrid. In Madrid, it was 11 a.m. in Atocha. It was the rush hour, and several bombs exploded, and lots of people were killed. One of the things that Angela has said, you want to say something, Angela?
No,
if you want, please.
I thought that was as well about the room and Twin Towers.
About the Twin Towers. There was the Twin Towers, the 11 a.m, the Russell Square bombing.
Yeah.
Sorry, I don't know if you can hear me. But one of the things also you have said to me in the past is that at that time you had a lot of paintings on the studio covered by a sheet.
Yeah.
And that's what started to make you thinking about something under a sheet, yeah, of a blanket. And when you saw all these images of, when there's an accident that you are wrapped with this kind of blankets, silver blankets. See, I like the idea of how you can show the body, because in the work of Angela, no matter what, always the body is present or absent. You always have this side. So she start underneath is lots of all works of Angela, and she just covered it with a white blanket. But what is underneath, it used to be a work. They are not leftovers, is it?
Yeah.
Half clutter. I'm personally very fond of it because I helped to make it. Angela called me a Sunday and said, please, come. I need to finish this work for Manifesta. And I'm like, listen, I cannot paint. Oh, that doesn't matter. So I went to the studio, and we were me and another guy. And Angela would say, push right, left. And for 2 hours, we were moving everything around. And it was very interesting because you realized that it was very important to be there, to be helping her, to find the right position for everything. And at the end, we managed to make it right. And at one point, Angela said, this is it. But 2 hours pushing around. I mean, it has my fingers, my DNA all over the place. But for me, it was very interesting. And something that Angela has always been very generous with, and she also has abused us, friends, curators, other artists, photographers. She always had the studio open. We could always go there and have discussions with her. She always would ask help a lot of the times to move things around that they were very heavy. I think perhaps you should talk about that one. This is you.
Yeah.
This is you. I mean, I never understood. When you decide to take the measurements and make the boxes, is it before you were playing with the wardrobes or after?
After. Yeah.
So in a way you kind of realize with the wardrobes that you will fit inside.
I bought them because I could fit inside.
Ah, you bought the Waldorf. Yeah, because I could see that the Waldorf were a bit small. Yeah. But then you decide to play more with the boxes. I mean, this is a metal box.
Yeah.
Well, we found this image, and we thought it was important to show it. And then this one, Angela.
That was before my thought. The look very military, and they look like, okay, like to my, how do you say?
Like, I mean, they look very military, yes. And then you also said the other day, camouflage?
Camouflage, and they look like boxes when you die.
And when you die, yeah, the boxes that you die, yeah.
What you call that?
God, I'm thinking in Spanish, ataúd. Coffins, like yeah, coffins.
Coffin.
They look like coffins, yeah. But it's kind of curious that you decide to take this image like that.
And because it looks a lot like that at the moment. I don't agree with the war.
Yeah, you don't agree about the war. But no. It really had a big impact on you, yeah. The Iraq war.
Yeah. I went to the demonstration.
And you went to the demonstration.
Against the war.
Against the war, yeah, yeah. But I mean, this is kind of a curious that you kind of led, because some of them are painted and some of them are, I mean, on the right, they are not painted. Then we have...
We have them painted.
Okay.
And also, I was very fed up of seeing a lot before I was at the limit.
And you were at the limit?
Yes.
Because you were fed up of showing, of...
I thought that I was, I had enough.
You had enough?
Yeah.
I mean, it's a fantastic picture. I mean, yesterday was the first time I saw it. Okay. Angela, at this stage, this is entitled Hall Number One. At this stage, Angela had a minor stroke and she lost her equilibrium. She needed to learn again to walk. And it's a metal cabinet supporting a box, but everything, it is hanging from a small screw. I mean, it's like, if when you see install it, you're thinking, this is going to collapse. And what Angela says a lot is that is when you lose the balance, you have the sensation that you are going to fall all the time, that you need to support to something all the time, that you are never going to be able to stand up straight again. No? I mean, it's one of the feelings you were mentioning yesterday. I mean, you also did this tea piece.
Yeah, just a million.
Yes, I mean, last night I was thinking of this piece, and I was thinking about, you know, Juan Muñoz had a sculpture that is a man supporting another man, because for me it's like also someone carrying another person, like here, like you supporting it with another person. Someone is carrying you also. As you, it's your size, you know? It's like you have kind of this container supporting another container. Deflated Brown, 2010. Then Angela had a much major stroke and she stopped working for 5 years. So, I mean, this is the first time she's talking in public for 5 years. I'm really proud to be here with her. And Deflated Brown, it was one of the first works she did after coming out from really serious rehab. The idea came because a friend of a fashion designer, I mentioned before, Rafael Lopez, came to see her to the hospital. And of course, even you're in the hospital, you're still thinking about your work. I mean, she spent all the days working in her work in the studio, and suddenly she was stuck in a bed in a hospital, going completely crazy, because one, she wanted to produce more work and she had ideas. So this friend came along and said to Angela, listen, you know what? You look like a balloon who has been deflated. And Angela thought, great, this is a fantastic idea. I'm going to do a work about it. So the first time she did this, she was still in the hospital and she was asked to participate in a group show that Michael Petri curated. Yeah. If I'm not wrong, correct me, Angela. And you put a deflated, you asked to be...
Look,
a balloon deflated inside a bottle.
Yeah.
So it was the first time she played with this idea, because of course you suddenly you cannot eat and you are being fed by intravenous, so you lose a lot of weight. So in a way, she also had become a bit of a loose fit. So deflated brown. It is the first time she played with this idea. What is very important for Angela is that she decided to do, as you see in the painting, even if she's still in the same color, the same browns, she does a border because she doesn't want that the painting looks like a cloth. She, if she didn't have the border, you would think, oh, that's like a cloth. What she wants is always that you have the reference of the painting, isn't it? And it's your height. The clutter bags that we saw before is also Angela's height. There's
153
or 56. Oh, well, we can add some centimeters. Deflated red. I mean, you cannot see, but still there is a border. I mean, psychologically that, I mean, it's like the nothing's on the floor. It's like no matter what, she can crumple a painting. You always have the reference that before it used to be a perfect square monochrome. And then afterwards, Angela just manipulates, destroys, reinvents, cuts, drags along. Is a painting that hangs by luck. I'm going to say what Angela said yesterday, but as you say, it's a painting that's a bit fuck up. Flat. As I said before, humor is very important. And some of you are sitting in some of these plastic chairs. I think at the end I've seen some of these chairs, black ones. Angela was asking about the chairs. The first thing she asked when we came here, why these different chairs here? So chairs are important for Angela, and being in the hospital, it was the first time she laughed when she was told that a woman sat down in a plastic chair and broke it. And Angela say, please, can I have it? So the chair and the legs were sitting in her hospital room for a long time. So anyone who came in knew something was going to happen with the chair and the legs. But we never knew what. Something that Angela said yesterday, I thought it was very funny, is that, it's very difficult to break these chairs. And I say, how you know it? And she say, because I tried so many times. I think she's expecting one of you to break one of the chairs tonight, this afternoon. But it kind of reflects placing the floor. It reflects the impossibility of walking. The legs are spread. You give orders, and they cannot move. Shall we go for the questions, Angela? We are going to switch on the lights, and then Angela will take some questions. I'll help you. Shall we approach you? I mean, can you hear Angela?
No, speak. Hello?
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Can I get the water? Agua.
Agua, ah, sí, agua, sí, perdón.
No, agua.
Sombra, claro. Perdón.
Would anybody like to ask any questions to Angela?
Are we doing with the lights on or off?
No,
but what?
Thank you. Is that me? Thank you. You put the left?
We are waiting for the lights to be on. I think someone needs to go to the basement and switch it on.
Yes, it's a very complicated thing.
I mean, it's kind of I don't know if you realize that there are people who are passing by.
Carolina, there's a question in the middle. If we go to...
Oh, yeah. You please take it. I cannot see it.
I cannot see that.
Angela.
Okay. Hello. I just wanted to ask if you could say a bit more...
Can you please speak up, because we cannot hear properly.
I feel this is so loud already. I wanted to ask if you could say a bit more about the materials you've used, because it's been it sort of evolved from oil paint to gloss to acrylics, and what those materials meant for you. And also, as you were painting these... You started off at the slate.
Shall we start with the first question?
Yes.
I think let's take it one at a time.
Thank you.
So you, were you? I mean, other We cannot really hear. Why we cannot really hear the person asking questions? If I understood well, you are asking Angela that about the materials.
Yes, about the use of acrylics, that, of oils, then gloss, then acrylics, and what?
The use of acrylics and oils in your work.
What?
She's asking about materials.
Yeah.
That is why you use oils, acrylics.
I use acrylic and oil to make it very elastic.
Elastic. Because for
they're supposed to be very tiny. Therefore, I use that to become flexible.
Flexible. I mean, one thing is, for Angela, always has been investing a lot. It was the material. It was very important that they were flexible, because, of course, then you can manipulate the canvas. But if not, if you are not careful, you cannot. I mean, I mentioned before, it's spectra gel.
Yeah, you know, materials are very important for me, because I want the work to look very good as well.
Yeah, you like it to look very good, but sometimes it looks very dirty.
But they're very, very dirty.
Yeah.
I look very good when I use very good material.
Even it looks very dirty, it was good materials.
Yeah, so they can be dirty.
So they can be dirty.
Yeah.
But spectra gel, Angela, I mean, what it did, for instance, as a material, it was the part, it was shiny or lumpy?
At the beginning, it was shiny, but after, it was like burden, because it's in the color. I never use it again. Apart from me, very toxic. I never use it.
But, why... can you hear me? For instance, in Phobia, it was very important for you because you decided to change to acrylic. I mean, what did make you change from oil to acrylic, for instance?
I was trying a new product.
Ah, you were trying a new product.
Yes.
It turned out to be a very good idea.
Yeah.
What was your second question? Can you put the microphone near, because we really cannot hear.
Can you hear me like this?
Yeah.
Okay. When you started off at the Slade with breaking your first painting, it was out of sadness of the fact that you were always painting the same painting. And I wonder, through your changing materials, changing colors, and I was particularly struck in the work that was called Damaged by the visible brush strokes, whether your relationship to the painting had changed.
No, I'm very free now. I'm very free.
You are very free, but I mean, Damage is a painting that, if I'm not wrong, I mentioned that you did it for an art fair.
I hate that thing.
You hate the art fair or the painting?
No, the art fair.
The art fair.
And the being the concept of it.
But in a way, were you angry with your painting, or you? I mean, you were showing the anger towards the commercial gallery.
I was.
Are they here?
It was like a death star. Like a humor gesture.
It was a humor gesture, yeah. I found it very interesting, the idea that you make the commercial gallery to put Damage on the corridor, and no one passes, I mean, everyone who passed by would think, who has damaged the painting?
I know, they made this
is what?
They may think they did that.
That themselves.
This.
Then they wouldn't buy it. Or perhaps yes. Perhaps yeah. That would make them buy it.
Sold?
It was sold. To a collector who sold, who did it?
I don't. It's very famous one.
But she was asking, it was like, did it change your relationship to the painting when you really start? I mean, I didn't explain it, but when you broke the stretcher, it's not that shame came about. There was a lot of process that you were also cutting paintings.
I was lying for a long time.
For a long time. I mean, it's not something... Sometimes, of course, you do the presentation and you show the result. but the result comes from a long process. In this case, Angela, you were taking out the material, the cleaning paintings, and then there was a stretcher left.
Yeah.
And then you took the crossbar.
I did everything.
until she hit the right.
Yes.
But you did cut it. I mean, you did cut it like Fontana.
Yeah, before.
Before, yeah, when you were a student.
Yeah. I did everything.
I don't think she does hate her painting. It's quite the opposite. I mean, one thing that I always remember going to see Angela at the studio, the Spitalfields Market. It was the first one she had after coming out from
Goldsmith.
Is that you would see her with the paintings, drag them along. That's why also they are dirty, I think, personally. And she would say, "You see my babies?" And then she would be there carrying the paintings all the way through the Spitalfields Market.
And you know, I love painting.
And you love painting, yes?
Yes. I love it. I wish it and I always will.
And you always will, yeah. I mean, already they are thinking about deflated and in the hospital. It's quite amazing. Another question?
Hello?
Hi.
Angela. I was at the Slade too, as you know. And when I was there, we were doing painting in the Euston Road School kind of style, which what I was becoming very aware of was the kind of end game of minimal painting from Rothko to Barnett Newman to Ryman, Bryce Marden, etc. And it was kind of very cool at that point to be talking about the idea that painting was dead. And of course, over the years, the idea that painting is dead became current currency. It would seem to me, I wanted to talk to you about this because I didn't. It was this first painting that you. We were unhappy with, in a sense, you decided that this was no good, and you brought it back to life by compromising it. And in a sense, you have put life back into the archetype of painting, which is your monochrome painting, and you have brought back the idea that painting can be brought back to life and made human again. And I think that when I first became aware of your work, it was the being made human and compromised and damaged or that interested me. But I just wanted you to see if there was any comment you had about this kind of cliche of painting being dead, because I think you've brought it back alive.
Hey.
Thank you.
Angela, any comment about it?
No.
No?
No, I can't.
I think you. Okay, let's try to make shorter questions. I think it's going to be much easier, no, Angela?
Yes.
I mean, it's nice that you are joining in the answers. Any other question? That is not so long. Or is something that you want to tell us, Angela?
Hi, I just have just kind of a simple question. I mean, I went to see the exhibit at Camden, up in Camden, and I'm just curious, when you move those pieces from there to another place, do they change? And do they, I mean, because they look like they're hard and they're going to, they look like they're soft, they can blow in the wind, so, but I know they must be hard, so yes, when you move them.
Which one you mean, the clutter wardrobes?
No, the ones that are canvases that are hanging.
But the canvases, they are not so soft.
Azure.
You know, you put
stuck,
in a box.
Like stuck. which is, it looks like it, like every installation would be slightly different.
Yeah. Yes, because Stag is a site specific. But I mean, you always, when you produce a work as an artist, you need to work out how this install it. I mean, sometimes it takes a while. But in the case of the paintings, because as Angela has said before, the materials are very flexible. It's something she has worked a lot. If not, there would be crack. You know, I mean, you can see in some early works, because she didn't have so much money, as it happens to all the artists at the beginning of their career, when they are students and they come out of the degrees and MAs, like, to produce work, it's like you produce it with a very minimum money. And at that time, you cannot think about lasting forever. But
because I was thinking, you said you spent 2 hours arranging that one piece.
Yeah.
But then when you move it, it's going to be different again.
I heard that they also spend 2 hours a manifesta installing.
but the design.
Yeah, and also in a way, that piece, you would lift the blanket that it covers, you would take a photograph. I mean, that's, thank God, a digital image, and then you can work it out again, you know? And you put it in a box. I mean, but they are not like they are not covering resin that they are becoming a sculpture. Of course, they move a bit around. No.
Yes.
But it is interesting that the new work that you probably will see it in the Leeson Gallery in 2011.
Fourth, yeah.
She's producing with aluminium.
Yes. Yeah.
So it's going to be resistant. I cannot say anymore. But it's going to be different.
Hi, can I ask a question about when you transformed from the idea of painting to objects and what the inspiration between that was? Because when I see the paintings, there seems to be this sense of deconstruction and obviously objecthood. But I personally, I think that it's easier to deconstruct a object than it is a painting, and I quite like that transformation between the two. What's your thoughts on using objects?
You can discuss a painting as well.
As an object?
Yes.
Because you think there is a painting, you thought of it as a painting or as an object?
Both.
Both?
Yes.
I mean, that was...
A painting was an object, and the object became a painting.
It's an object that becomes a painting.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it is for you, the moment that you are able to think differently is what opened the doors, in a way, isn't it?
Yeah. Yes. Because before, when I was studying in Goldsmith, everybody hate the painting.
The painting is what you were doing.
Everybody
hate the painting.
Yeah, when I was a student.
When one is a student, can produce very bad work.
No, I mean, people hate the painting.
I hate the painting. I mean, I say before, yeah, it was kind of the ugly, you felt that it was the ugly sister.
Yeah, it was everybody around me was making me the sculpture and film.
And film, yeah. I mean, you were studying with Steve McQueen?
Yeah.
Who else was with you in the course?
Jason
Rhodes?
Martin.
And Jason Martin?
Tomoko
Takashagi?
Yes. I was with a lot of people. I was the generous, 2 generations after the YBA.
Are you 2 generations after the YBA?
Yes.
But in Goldsmith, you were thinking paintings were paintings.
Painting art crap and backwards is what they were thinking.
The others?
When I was a student, and the others and the teachers.
And the teachers?
Yeah.
But I mean.
No, they don't anymore.
No, I don't think anymore. Yeah. But then, I mean, was it very important for you to go to the slate? I mean, it really made you completely think differently in relation to your work?
When I went to the slate, I was really interested because it was very traditional.
It was very traditional.
And at the same time, it was a way you could make a diferencia en las calles ambientes. For me, it was the first thing I could do, go to the slave to develop my language.
And but the slave is an MA of a sculpture and critical theory.
Yeah.
So you kind of, in a way, it completely make you shift the way you've thought about your work.
But you know, in that, I left to paint in the sculpture. I was the only painter in the sculpture.
Ah, you were the only painter in the whole sculpture department.
Yeah, of course.
But you always like to be the only one.
I love it. And I have bigger space.
And your contemporaries were Sylvie Floyer?
No,
and Goldsmith?
Yeah.
I thought Sylvie was with you at the stage.
No, it was in Goldsmith.
And Goldsmith?
Yeah. And there was a young man, a great admirer. Hard work.
You are great at my hard work.
Yes. Yes, I am.
But I mean, this, it was interesting, this question, in the sense that when do you really thought you could deconstruct the painting? When you broke?
When I was in Goldsmith.
And when you were in Goldsmith?
Already.
Already?
It was quite a radical school. I remember reading Derrida.
Ah, you were reading Derrida?
Oh, yes. I loved it. I think the book was The Truth of Painting.
The Truth of Painting. And I think also you were reading Brian Doherty, The Why Inside the Why Cube?
Yeah.
I mean, and you came from philosophy, so in a way you had the conceptual frame of mind to...
Yeah, but you know what I learned in philosophy, to keep an open mind.
To keep an open mind.
Yeah.
I mean, I find it, did it felt when you broke the stretcher or you took the crossbar? The moment you took the crossbar, did you feel that you had the power in your hands?
I felt I had a new language. I felt I could do other things with painting. It was amazing.
It was amazing, no? The sensation?
Yeah.
I can imagine that. I mean, and then did you, because of course, you take the crossbar, okay? And then, but you didn't put it in the corner. It took a while, no?
Yeah, but I put it in the corner because I was in a shop. When everybody was fighting to put the big big.
So it was the big boys? What's the boys?
No, and I thought if I could do the corner, I could hold space to myself.
Ah, yeah.
So, and this.
Yeah, because, so it was a group show, it was painting, and everybody was fighting to have the biggest painting in the show in the best space.
Yeah.
And you turn up there with a little shame.
And I put in the corner. No, I broke the thing. And I put it in the corner.
And you put it in the corner, yeah. There.
Yeah.
Fantastic, Angela. And did it feel good?
Yeah, it felt amazing.
That's great. Well, thank you for having done it. Any other question?
No more questions. Okay, well, it is now 4:15 and time for us to draw this event to a close. And I would hope that you'll all join me in thanking both Carolina and Angela for their generous time and insight into Angela's work. Thank you.